I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. When the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders hit most cities in March 2020, the toll on industries across the United States was massive. But the unprecedented event ended up being an unexpected boon to a sector of the economy that had been struggling for years. App-based food delivery services like Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Postmates. But despite the food delivery app business more than doubling during the pandemic, these companies are still struggling to turn a profit. And they're increasingly seeing their business model challenged by local governments, workers, and the very restaurants they say they're serving. Now consolidation is the name of the game. DoorDash bought Caviar. Uber bought Postmates. There might be fewer players on the field, but the game is still up for grabs. The winner might not be the company that offers the best service, but the one with the most cash on hand to outlast the rest. Prithika Rana is a technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's been writing all about the industry, and we'll discuss how apps like DoorDash and Grubhub plan to survive the multiple challenges facing their business. All that's coming up next.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. Prithika Rana, welcome to Business Wars.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's great to have you with us. You know, it's rare we get a business war where all the combatants are still struggling to turn a profit, but the food delivery app sector is filled with contenders who haven't quite cracked profitability. I know Grubhub's chief executive, Matt Maloney, told the Wall Street Journal that food delivery is and always will be a crummy business. His words. Why do you think it is that this is such a difficult equation for these companies, Prithika?
Just to give listeners a sense of the kinds of costs that apps are dealing with, they pay the restaurant. They, of course, take a cut from the restaurant to provide the service, but they pay the restaurant for the food that people order. Then they pay the driver. Now, let's take the example of DoorDash, given that they have the best unit economics in the business. After DoorDash pays the restaurant, after it pays the driver, it's left with a few dollars on an average order. The cost that consumers don't see behind the scenes is the cost of advertising that DoorDash spends to get consumers onto their platform. They're then spending money on things like refunds. Sometimes restaurants mess up your order. Sometimes Dashers mess up the order. So they're refunding people for that. Then there are other operational costs like paying companies like Visa and MasterCard a credit card processing fee on every order. So if we look at the best quarter for DoorDash during the pandemic, DoorDash made 90 cents on an average order during the pandemic, which is worth $36. So 90 cents on a $36 delivery. That's what it was left with. And those are the best margins in the business.
That really puts things in perspective, because I think a lot of us have had the experience of, you know, ordering food delivery and it seems to cost a whole lot more than it would be if you, say, went down to the restaurant itself. And you wonder, where's all that money going to, given that a lot of these companies are just not profitable? I guess the follow-on question, and the obvious one, and maybe it's silly, but what's the point of running this kind of business if it's just not that lucrative?
The name of the game is scale. If we can get enough of people onto our platforms, if we can capture the lion's share of the market, eventually we can become profitable. So over the last decade, the name of the game was to burn VC money, to get as many consumers, to get as many restaurants onto the platform. Mm-hmm. Now, what the pandemic did was that it accelerated that. So all of a sudden, you have millions of new people who have adopted food delivery. So this was really an inflection point for apps to say, okay, wait a minute, we have now gotten some sort of scale that we were hoping to get to maybe 5 or 10 years from now, and yet we still can't turn a profit. If after a global pandemic, you still can't make the math work, that's a question that the companies are now contending with.
Very interesting, because you would think that during the pandemic, you've got these delivery services, these app-based delivery services with a kind of lock on the market. I mean, you can't go to the grocery store, right? You can't go out and enjoy your favorite restaurant. And there are a lot of people, like never before, ordering with much greater frequency. If a pandemic can't turn things around, then what can? You know, I guess that really is the multi-billion dollar question here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think my sources as well are contending with the same question. The question that companies like DoorDash and Uber Eats are now asking internally is, can we make money delivering food alone? And I think that the companies themselves have come up with a short answer for that, which is no. Because what Uber and DoorDash are increasingly doing is that they are expanding into more lucrative offerings like delivering your grocery, delivering your toilet paper, delivering alcohol. Uh-huh. So they very quickly expanded into all of these categories during the pandemic. And the reason is they have to increase people's basket sizes. They can't just have a consumer order a burrito because that's losing money. They're still paying the driver. So what Uber is going to start doing starting this month is that when you're about to check out with your burrito, it's going to ping you and say, hey, CVS is right next door, or Walgreens is right uh-huh. next door to the Chipotle that you just ordered from. Do you also want to add toilet paper or shampoo or toothpaste or Tylenol to your food order? You know, we've all become accustomed to the convenience of delivery during the pandemic. And you say, yeah, you know, why not? I do need to do a grocery run, or I am running a bit short on toilet paper. Why not? Yeah. So all of a sudden, your $20 burrito goes to $70 because you've now added groceries, or you've now added convenience items, or you've now added alcohol. So basket sizes go up, and at the same time, they're able to lower the cost of delivery because they're paying the Dasher for one delivery, mm-hmm. even though, you know, it's delivering multiple orders within the same delivery. Now, sure. If you're a Grubhub, though, the path is completely different.
Why is that?
Well, Grubhub thinks that that's not going to make Uber and DoorDash money either. They are going to go back to their roots as an online marketplace for restaurants. You know, just to remind listeners, Grubhub pioneered online ordering for restaurants. So back in the day, they weren't really doing the delivery for restaurants. You know, these restaurants had their own delivery personnel who were doing the delivery, but they served as a middleman in getting those online orders. So mm-hmm. Grubhub has said to us, we are going to go back to our roots as, you know, an online marketplace for restaurants. We don't think that delivery is ever going to make money. They think that, you know, once restaurants reopen, once restaurants are profitable again, once people start going back, there will be a willingness to spend more and more on advertising for restaurants. And Grubhub thinks that those ads are what are going to make them money.
This may sound like a dopey question, but well, why not put a price floor on every order? Why would DoorDash or Uber Eats not say minimum order $25, for example? And that way, at least you cut your losses or you provide at least some kind of level that might get you closer to that profitability tipping point.
So saying you have to order a minimum of this much in order to get delivery might cut out some consumers. It might even anger some restaurants where they say, you know what, DoorDash isn't bringing us as many consumers. We're just going to work with Uber Eats. And right now, everybody's fighting for the lion's share of the market. You still have multiple players. None of the apps can afford to do that yet. There is consolidation happening. So I think we might get closer to that when you have one player or two players in the market where there is a virtual monopoly and apps can set these rules with much more conviction and not as much pushback.
You know, it's one of the things that's frustrating from the user standpoint is when you're really sort of pining for an In-N-Out burger, for example, and you look all over the delivery apps and you can't find In-N-Out burger, come to find out that there's something about the relationship between these apps and In-N-Out and other restaurants that a lot of users don't understand. What is that relationship? I mean, you would think that a lot of these restaurants would love to have the extra business that an app would provide.
Right. You know, the relationship, especially during the pandemic, has been pretty tense. So the way that delivery apps make money is that they charge a commission on every order from restaurants. And they also charge consumers some service fee. You know how your $20 burrito goes to $30 because apps charge you $10 in fees. Well, that's how they make money. Now, what happened during the pandemic is that in-store dining was virtually shut down, and restaurants had to rely on delivery apps for any sort of money. It really ate into their bottom line when every single order has, say, a 30% commission on it. So imagine you're a small restaurant, and every order you're paying DoorDash or Uber Eats or Grubhub a 30% commission, so a 30% cut of the bill. What started happening during the pandemic was that more and more small restaurants turned to local apps, less popular apps that were giving them more favorable rates. Some even started redeploying idled restaurant staff as delivery drivers. And we saw that some of the big chains like Chipotle increasingly started investing in pickup services to steer people away from third-party delivery.
Very interesting. Wow. So where do you see that aspect of the business heading? I mean, do you think that there is going to be ultimately a sort of truce between the apps and some of these restaurants that feel that they've been wronged by the delivery services?
We're already starting to see that happen. So as the economy reopens and in-store dining reopens, delivery apps realize that, yes, we have to keep restaurants happy. Otherwise, once in-store dining resumes, a lot of them might start pulling back. So what DoorDash did in April was that it allowed restaurants to set their own commissions. Uber has said that it's experimenting with something similar. So what it did was it said, well, we're now giving you the freedom to choose between three commission rates, 15%, 25%, and 30%. Of course, you know, with varying degrees of support, if you choose the lowest rate, DoorDash wouldn't give you as much marketing support as it gives the restaurant that chose a 30% commission. Right. There's also a caveat where the restaurant that now pays the lower commission, DoorDash has to make money somehow, so it'll charge consumers a higher delivery fee in order to make up for the commission that it's not getting from the restaurant. Now, a higher delivery fee might discourage some consumers from ordering from those restaurants because their costs go up.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Preetika Rana is a technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We've been talking about the food delivery industry. There are other obstacles on the horizon. More than 70 U.S. municipalities or states have temporarily capped what apps could charge restaurants for their delivery services, as I understand it. Has that been affecting the apps and the delivery services?
Oh, absolutely. All the three major apps, Uber, DoorDash, and Grubhub, have been very vocal, and they've spoken out against this. You know, Grubhub's losses actually widened during the pandemic. And they said, in part, it was because of these commission caps. The margins are already so razor thin in delivery. And then on top of it, regulators step in and say, you know, we're going to cap what you can charge restaurants because restaurants are hurting during the pandemic. So that also hurts delivery apps' bottom line. What we're seeing behind the scenes is very aggressive lobbying. What we were told was that New York City is one of the places that was considering making these commission caps permanent, even after the health crisis wanes. So we saw reps from DoorDash and Uber go in, and Uber said, you know, we're a much smaller actor in New York City compared to our rivals. We're not the bad guy here. DoorDash said, look, you know, we used to do things before where we would list restaurants on our platform without their permission. We've stopped those practices. We're not the bad guy either. So, you know, we're seeing apps go in and negotiate with regulators so that these commission caps don't become permanent, because that is a big strain on their bottom line.
You know, I guess we're sort of avoiding the elephant in the room here, and that's the biggest issue in the food delivery app war is labor, right? I mean, drivers are working long hours, often for wages that they feel that are unfair, right? Are the apps doing anything to try to create a better dynamic between the drivers and the company themselves, improving wages, anything along those lines?
So if you ask the delivery apps, they say, yes, you know, we are committed to fair wages, we are committed to better benefits. And one of the things that Uber, DoorDash, Instacart all joined hands on in California last year was something called Prop 22, essentially helped the app circumvent a state law that wanted to reclassify all their drivers as employees eligible for broad employment benefits. So what the company said was, well, most of our drivers don't want to work full time, so let's not classify them as employees. But at the same time, yes, we do see that there is a need to give them more benefits than we currently do. So let's have that. Let's have a model where they remain independent contractors, but we give them more benefits than we currently are. You know, that means health insurance for drivers who drive, say, more than 15 hours a week, occupational accidental insurance on the job, reimbursing them for certain number of miles driven. So they did offer some of these benefits to drivers because of Prop 22. But guess what? Consumers in California now pay for those benefits. So if you look at your receipt will say driver benefits or Prop 22, depending on what app you use, but it's the consumer that is paying for these benefits now.
I see. They say as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation. And I suppose a lot of people imagine that what's happening in California with Prop 22 is likely to happen nationwide. Is there a sense of how this might affect drivers and ultimately the food delivery apps, the delivery apps themselves?
Right. Yeah. The companies have been pretty vocal in saying that they want to make Prop 22 the national model. You have other states, I think Massachusetts, New Jersey, that want to go the California route, where they also are pushing to classify drivers as employees so they get the full web of protections that full-time employees get in the United States. But the apps are, of course, pushing back against that, saying, well, let's have a model where they remain independent, but they get some benefits, not all. They get some benefits better than they are right now. But of course, it's still not at a level of, say, a full-time employee. So that battle is unfolding as we speak, and it'll be very interesting to see where that goes. Gig workers themselves are banding together or becoming more organized or demanding more for the work that they do, because ultimately they are the backbone of these companies. Without them, there is no delivery service. Right. So we are seeing the workers themselves become more organized, demand for more, and it's not going to be so easy for apps to just brush that under the rug. Yes, 10 years ago it was, but now it won't be that simple.
So you talk about the future of the food delivery app, and you hear people say, well, they've heard of drones possibly delivering food, driverless cars. How much is all of this real? Do all of these broader delivery innovations really make sense for the food delivery apps? And where do you see the direction of the business?
Well, one of the biggest costs to delivery apps is labor. As far as apps go, if you can cut out that cost, you can really boost your bottom line. So they are looking at things like drones and bots that can help drive down the delivery cost at some point in the future. But I think we are years, if not decades, away from that being widely used. There was a lot of talk around technologies like these before the pandemic, but I think we're still a long, long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. So is there a way to declare a winner in this business war? Who wins this one? And for that matter, is this a war that's even winnable if no one's really making much of a profit?
I think the way to think about this is food delivery alone profitable? Can food delivery alone ever make these apps money? The apps themselves are thinking around that. The apps themselves are thinking of solutions around that. And it would be very interesting to see who emerges as the winner. If you ask Uber and DoorDash, they say, well, expanding into things like alcohol and groceries that raise people's basket sizes, drive down our delivery cost, is going to be our solution. One of the things that they're also doing is acting as last mile logistics partners for retailers like Walmart or Macy's. So in that case, what happens is you order on Walmart.com or you order on Macy's.com, and you think that, okay, a Walmart driver is delivering my order, but actually Walmart is behind the scenes using a DoorDash driver. Now, these orders are far more profitable for apps than, you know, their own ordering through their own platform is. And I'll tell you why. For these deliveries, the apps don't have to spend any ad dollars on trying to get the orders. So they save on the advertising costs, and they don't even need to refund consumers when something goes wrong. You know, that's on Walmart. So to give you a sense, DoorDash actually makes a $2 profit on those last mile deliveries compared to the 90 cents that it makes on an average order of food. So Uber and DoorDash are very much going that way, where they're saying, don't just think of us as food delivery apps. Think of us as an app that powers, you know, your everyday needs. You know, I was speaking with an executive at Uber who had a great quote who said, you know, Amazon powers next day delivery. We are going to power next hour delivery, where we're not just going to get you your food, but we're going to get you your toothpaste, your toilet paper, your alcohol, and even your Walmart delivery. So that's what Uber and DoorDash, that's the way they're thinking about it. Grubhub, of course, is going to go back to its roots as an online marketplace. It'll be very interesting to see which strategy pans out. But needless to say, I think the takeaway is, you know, can delivering your food alone ever be profitable?
The takeaway, that wasn't meant to be a pun, was it? Preethika Rana is a technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal, and she's been writing all about the food delivery app industry. Thanks so much for taking time to speak with us on Business Wars.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure.
From Wondery, this has been Episode 5 of Food Delivery Wars for Business Wars. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. You'll also find some links and offers from our sponsors in the episode notes. Supporting them helps us keep offering our shows for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey and tell us which business stories you'd like to hear. I'm your host, David Brown. Lori Galloretta produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.